And salutations, friends, and welcome back to The Arcade. We are your video game podcast here for the week of Friday, July 15th of the year 2016. We thank you so much for joining us once again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. I am Mike the Legend here with you on an absolutely jam-packed episode of The Arcade. There's been a lot that's been happening in the world of video games, and we are here to try and bring it all to you here on this week's episode. It's kind of a week unlike what we've seen or in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And my nickname this week alludes to that. This week I'm Dennis, the man who wants to be the very best like no one ever was.
Thank you for not choosing an obtuse nickname this week that requires much weird explanation.
Much explanation or weird parallels to be drawn, but no, that line should be known to a fair number of people, because it was the opening words to the theme song for the anime program that a lot of people of our generation and a little bit younger, a little bit older would have watched back in the mid-90s called Pokemon.
Indeed, perhaps you heard of it, the story, the animated adventures of a young Ash Ketchum setting out from his home to...
In Pallet Town,
thank you, to...
In the Kanto region.
Enough. but setting out on his quest to become the best Pokemon trainer in all the lands, with his trusty Pikachu at his side.
Yes.
He sets forth in land to... battle, capture, train, and engage in gyms, try to earn badges, and thus, you know, work his way up the rankings to become the world's greatest Pokemon trainer. And for a great generation of us who were there at the forefront, we were on the beaches for the waves of Pokemania that came crashing down upon us. We always kind of envisioned what it would be like if we ever got to be Ash Ketchum, if we ever got to travel around, walk around the lands, and just catch Pokemon. And I'm sure so many of us thought back then, wow, wouldn't that be cool? Wouldn't that be neat just to walk around and find, you know, a wild whatever, you know, Pokemon comes across your path.
But of course, like, the thought then turns to, well, but that's crazy. I mean, Pokemon don't exist in real life. How could you possibly just encounter these wild, weird animals that there's a certain finite number of and you can collect and you have to get a collection of or whatever. And like, how can you possibly go around and, you know, encounter other people who are also searching for them? I mean, the whole idea just sort of falls apart at that point.
Certainly. I mean, there's a lot of practical limitations to it, but the idea, just the concept, the impression of wanting to be like Ash Ketchum, just go around, catch Pokemon for a living, you know, and just train them and catch them and throw your Pokeballs and that challenge of it. That was captivating for so many of us back then. And now here in 2016, we find ourselves with that reality upon us.
It's true. I mean, I remember when we first were talking about this Pokemon Go thing, we didn't really know what it was going to ship up to be. We weren't sure what the scope of it was necessarily going to be or how immersive it seemed like it would be, anything. But now that we've seen the release, the official and in some places not so official release of this game, and sort of the, I don't want to say fallout, but I want to say, or aftermath even, since we're in it right now, mm-hmm. We're seeing what it actually is, and we don't even have the fully realized game yet.
No, we don't. It's just an initial release.
Yeah.
There is the ability.
It's not even version 1 yet. It's version 0.29, at least according to the version that I'm running on my phone.
But it's not released here yet.
Yes, I'm aware. But you know who else is aware of that? Everyone else I've encountered with a smartphone so far in the past week, also in our city of Winnipeg, Manitoba, in Canada. A place where it's not actually released yet.
No, it's not. And the surprising thing is that given the global phenomena that Pokemon Go has just become in days, really in the last week.
Yeah.
it has just swept across the entire world, across people's smartphones, is that it's only officially released in a handful of countries. Australia, New Zealand, the United States, Germany, and I believe Britain just got it in within the past day or two. Other countries, such as Canada, such as Japan, such as South Korea, to my knowledge, don't have it yet.
Yes.
Can you imagine when Japan gets it?
I mean, they probably have it, like Canada has it, though.
In various gray channel ways.
Yes.
You know, various, you're not really supposed to, but they're going to turn a blind eye to it, to your ways of getting it in your non-officially released countries. Yes, that kind of thing. But
yes, you can sideload an APK from whatever source you can source it from for your Android phone, mm-hmm. or get your, follow the obtuse steps and get in an American Apple iTunes account
mm-hmm.
for your Apple device.
There's
ways to do it.
There's ways if you are willing. This is one thing we've learned in the age of the internet. While some things may still be region locked, there's always a workaround, or yep. almost always a workaround, and Pokemon Go has proven that people are that inventive to come up with new ways to get around it, and determined to get them too. If you provide a product for the people that they really want, they will find it.
Yes. But we have a lot of interesting things to talk about related to Pokemon Go this week.
We do.
Because it's obviously the top news of the week.
I have not seen a week like this where the news cycle has been so overwhelmed with the majority of stories focused on one thing since, I don't know, probably the early days of the Wii. Is my guess, since we've seen such a global phenomenon, just have so many news items come out of it. But if you're Nintendo at this moment, you have got to be loving life.
Yeah, I mean, as like a one-third owner of the Pokemon company, when a property that you're so closely attached to is doing so well on a global scale, it's a good thing, I would imagine.
It certainly is, and also, I mean, given the big positive news, feelings and sentiment for Nintendo coming out of E3 just last month with the reveal of Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild that got so many people talking, ultimately winning many awards for the E3 Game Critics Best of E3 Awards, and people looking forward to the NX next year. Nintendo is doing quite well, but other news that Nintendo came out with just on Thursday, July 14th, just further added to the fact that this is a very good time to be Nintendo. And they seem to be firing on all cylinders and hitting all the right buttons of really our generation, those who are kind of late 20s, into their 30s.
Yeah, into their 30s. People who probably have some disposable income now,
mm-hmm.
who maybe didn't when we first saw the first wave of cool stuff come up on Nintendo, and it sort of passed us by because we were but children, and now we're not. And we now have wallets that can open up to these things. And one of the things that, you know, I recall was the vast selection of Nintendo games that when I was a child, I was not necessarily able to afford to purchase. And then as an adult, I would spend some time, you know, trying to get copies of these games here and there. And, you know, to varying degrees of success, sourcing, you know, maybe cartridges that might not be in the best condition or things like that. But regardless, old game systems that were released by Nintendo had great games on them, is basically what I'm trying to say, and Nintendo knows this.
This is true, and Nintendo is cashing in on the nostalgia that a lot of people have for their first system, the NES, because on Thursday of this week, July 14th, they really set the social media world abuzz and got a lot of people talking with the announcement of what some people are just casually referring to as the mini NES, but it's officially termed the NES Classic Edition. And the Coles Notes, the TLDR, if you have not really heard it, have not really seen it, aren't too familiar with what it is quite yet, let me just say, have you ever been in a store and seen those 5-in-1, 6-in-1, 12-in-1 devices that are a bunch of games preloaded onto a single cartridge that you just plug in through the RCA ports of your TV?
Yeah, or even just in the form factor of a controller or whatnot.
Exactly.
That plugs in.
You know, we've seen those for Atari controllers, Sega controllers or what have you. Just a handful of games in the form factor of a controller. And sure, they were all right, but there was always something about them that seemed maybe not authentic, maybe not always on the up and up, maybe not the highest quality.
Yeah, I mean, there was always that air of something about this is not official. I mean, it might be licensed, but it doesn't feel official because there's something just slightly off about them. And they're, and you know, there was always weird quirks to these devices too. Like sometimes they would freeze or they just felt shoddy.
Mm-hmm. Buttons just didn't feel the way you remember, didn't function the way they did, you know, as well as they could have. So it just, not always the greatest, but the NES Classic Edition is kind of like that. Except it's a shrunken down version of the Nintendo Entertainment System.
But it's not entirely like that because it's made by Nintendo.
And there's the great difference and why this is going to do absolute gangbusters when it releases on November 11th. Again, it's kind of a palm-sized version of the Nintendo Entertainment System. Looks the way you remember, just shrunken down, probably by Rick Moranis in the, you know, popular movie that came out in the era and the lifespan of the NES, where he accidentally shrunk down his children.
Yes, and he had to explain to his wife that he did this.
Hilarity ensued.
Indeed.
But it's not only that, it comes preloaded with 30 classic Nintendo Entertainment System games.
And I think the list of games is really what sets it apart from some of these, like, you know, collections of classic games, because you... A lot of these things, you'll often see the list of games, it'll be like a couple good games, then just a lot of trash.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this one, it really looks like it's a really good cross-section. I mean, there's a couple in there that are kind of questionable, in my opinion, that we don't really need to see again, necessarily. But overall, a good mix of games, I think.
It really is. The suggested retail price for this NES Classic Edition is $60 US, what that works out to in Canadian dollars, who knows when November 11th rolls around.
Indeed.
Hopefully it's right around 60, fingers crossed.
Yes.
Please, exchange rates.
Not too much more.
Exchange rates, please stop screwing us, because God, that hurts. But when it I'm going to be paying whatever price.
Yeah.
I have resigned myself to that fact.
I've decided I'm getting one of these as well.
Upon first learning and seeing what the hell this thing was, I made that determination. I have to have this.
I mean, my knee-jerk reaction was, oh, great, another one of these chintzy things that you just plug into your HDMI port and they're just crap. But then I looked at the list of games and went, okay, fine.
And as we said, there's 30 games, a lot of classic ones. We'll just kind of list them off quickly for you here for you to determine which are classic and if this is something that is worth getting for your shelf, your unit to plug in to your TV. There's Balloon Fight, Bubble Bobble, Castlevania 1, Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest, Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong Jr., Double Dragon 2, Dr. Mario, Excitebike, Final Fantasy, Galaga, Ghosts and Goblins, Gradius, Ice Climber, Kid Icarus, Kirby's Adventure, and then we also have the classic Mario Brothers arcade game.
Yep.
And then following that is Mega Man 2, Metroid, Ninja Gaiden, Pac-Man, Punch-Out, Star Tropics, Super C, and then all three Super Mario Brothers games, and then Legend of Zelda 1, Legend of Zelda 2, and Tecmo Bowl.
Yes. So, almost entirely solid games. I mean, if it was me, I could probably go without all of the classic arcade games in there. Like, we don't really need to see Galaga again.
Gradius.
Really, Gradius again. We don't really need to see, like, maybe Donkey Kong or Pac-Man. Like, come on.
Bubble Bobble I personally could do without.
Yeah. And I would probably swap out Castlevania 2 for Castlevania 3. Or just add Castlevania 3.
You could.
But, Final Fantasy? I might get this just to play through that again because my cartridge is corrupt.
Oh, that's harsh.
Yeah.
So let me just reiterate again, this is $60 for the unit. You're getting 30 games and, there is great value in that price point because
it's $2 a game if you think of it just in terms of games,
which is true.
And on the virtual console, the games cost more than $2.
They are $5 on the virtual console and not all of these are necessarily on the virtual console.
Yes.
And
not to mention, you also get what I'm going to assume is a legit feeling controller.
Oh, I believe so. It is the classic, NES controller, just redone with kind of a new cord on it, new connection that plugs into new controller ports on your micro NES here.
But also
the interesting thing is that the, controller ports on the micro NES are the same ports that you see on the bottom of your Wii remote controller. So these new NES controllers coming with the micro NES here in November, you can then use them when you're not playing your micro NES to play, like you plug them into the bottom of your Wii remote controller and can use them to play your virtual console games, like your classic NES virtual controller games.
Yes.
Or old Game Boy games or whatnot. And have a more authentic experience with an NES controller and the simplicity of that.
Yep.
That just innately intuitive feel of the NES controller that so many of us grew up on and just have down pat.
Yep.
That we still look for in controllers today.
Yeah, the feel of those particular buttons for the NES, and more particular for me anyways, the SNES, but similar feeling buttons, that like particular tactile response that you're looking for, which a lot of controllers don't necessarily have anymore.
Not necessarily, no. So included with the NES Classic Edition, you get the little palm-sized device itself, which comes loaded with 30 games. You get an HDMI cable, AC adapter, and one NES Classic controller. If you wish to acquire another one, they will be on sale for $10.
Which is awesome.
Which is just wonderful. That is...
Like, you might as well.
It's true. It really is true.
I mean, there's nothing more fun than just, you know, killing a Super Mario Brothers game with a friend.
And sometimes you need that.
Yeah.
Because everyone out there just has those levels that they can't do.
Or just they hate. It's just like, I don't want to do this level. It's like, okay, I'll do that one.
It's fine. Yeah. So maybe it's those ice levels. And you're just like, no, I'm not dealing with it.
Yeah. Or maybe it's the level in Super Mario 3 with the sun. I know some people don't like that level. I can do it just fine, but.
Or the forced scrolling levels.
Oh man. Ugh.
Yeah.
The auto scroll levels as they were.
Yes. Thank you for the proper terminology. Yeah. Oh God. No. No. You can do those.
I mean, I don't like doing those, but fine.
I'm turning to you. You have no choice. In the press release, heralding this announcement, Nintendo of America COO and President Reggie Fils-Aimé said, quote, "We wanted to give fans of all ages the opportunity to revisit Nintendo's original system and rediscover why they fell in love with Nintendo in the first place. The Nintendo Entertainment System NES Classic Edition is ideal for anyone who remembers playing the NES or who wants to pass on those nostalgic memories to the next generation of gamers." And this is actually an important point because it is going to, as a device, appeal to the original audience of the NES. You know, those of us in, you know, 30s, maybe even low 40s, depending on how old you were when you first got an NES as a child. But
or as a young adult.
A young adult, what have you. You maybe don't have your NES anymore. Maybe it, you know, cacked out. Maybe you just have moved away from it. Maybe you have moved on to more modern systems and have abandoned it. It's sitting in your closet. You don't feel like, you know, playing it. Parts don't work.
Or you don't have a TV with RCA inputs anymore and you don't have like all the necessary cords and you just figure, screw it. It's not enough. It's not worth it to try to fiddle this around. But this one's just a brand new thing, and it's just a single HDMI cord, and it's nice and clean and easy.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have to worry about getting the cartridges. Maybe you can't find them. They're lost. Batteries on them are dead and don't save anymore.
Yeah.
So, and also too, part of the reason I'm going to get it, I don't have most of the games on here. I mean, I have in my collection of NES games that I've accumulated over the years, 50 plus NES titles.
Yeah.
I maybe have a handful of stuff on here.
I mean, I have a bunch of the games on here, but I'll admit, it's just, I don't really like pulling out the old system anymore. It's just, it seems like it's a lot of work, and like, it's less and less reliable as you're, you know, swapping your cartridges out and stuff, and it's just wear and tear on these devices is just kind of like starting to take its toll. And I mean, I could go the emulation route very easily, but there's just something about playing, you know, on your couch with a legitimate controller, playing these games, you know, as they're sort of intended. And, you know, call me a traditionalist that way, but I just kind of prefer it that way.
Certainly. And there will be people like you and I who get this to have those moments of nostalgia, but this is going to be an introduction to the NES for an entire new generation of kids.
Very likely.
I know I spoke, passed this story along to my sister when I first came across it, and her almost initial response was, getting this for my son. This is Christmas right here. This is what he's getting for Christmas.
Yes.
And this might be Nintendo's killer release for the holiday season.
Yeah.
It's the same price point as a game. It's not a new system, but...
But it's 30 games that have lasted, you know, the test of time that people will remember and go, oh man, yeah, of course I'll buy that.
Yeah. And it's being released kind of right in the middle of the holiday shopping season.
Yeah. It's not an expensive gift.
No.
To give someone.
It isn't.
But it would be a good gift, I think.
And also, I'm sure a gift that can be given to a lot of people these days for whom you're like, I don't know what to get them. Even perhaps parents of our generation are like, you're an adult, you buy your own stuff now, I don't know what to get you.
Yeah.
I'll get you this thing. I know you liked old video games, here you go. So this...
So if my parents are listening, or anyone that doesn't know what to get me, hint, hint.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink. And a knowing nod.
And although the one downside to this mini NES when it comes out, you won't have that old nostalgic experience of blowing in the cartridges to get them to work again.
It's true.
Or having that one friend who had the goddamn magic touch.
Yes. Sometimes that was me, depending on the system. Other times it was not me. Sometimes I was just too frustrated and just decided, screw that. I can't get it working today. But the other thing that sort of bothers me is that I know it's not going to have scan lines. Scan lines are something that emulation definitely got right. And on newer HD TVs, I don't want to see super crisp pixels. I want to see those scan lines just every second pixel just to sort of even it out and make it look more like an old TV. Because honestly, these games look better on old TVs because of that.
They do. They really do. Perhaps there will be some kind of feature or setting.
I hope so.
For that.
I really hope that they put that in there, because that's my number one complaint with the virtual console, for example, anyways. But we'll see. I'll still buy this thing or try to get it at some point, because it's still honestly a great selection of games.
It is, and this is the kind of thing where I could see Nintendo releasing perhaps a second edition of it with 30 more classic games, ones that got left out from this first release. Maybe like Tetris.
Yeah.
Something like that. MC Kids. Laugh as much as you want about it.
It was a great game.
An advert game, but as far as platformers go, wow. Was that ever hard?
It was hard, but it was good.
It really was.
But hopefully if this does well, we'll maybe even see a Super Nintendo version. I'd be happy with that. I'd be very happy with that.
I could see that. I could certainly see that. And, just given the storage capacity of, flash storage, flash memory now, you can cram a whole lot of games into very small form factors now. So hey, maybe this is a thing.
I would actually dare say that there's almost no reason for Nintendo not to be able to put their entire NES library into something like this.
And that is true. Although not every game was good or worthy of it.
No, they weren't. Anyone that's ever downloaded an entire ROM package and tried to just randomly play through games will know this. Most games were not good at all. The majority of games were not good, I would dare say. But given that there were almost 800 games for the NES, I think that's fair to say.
Also, I think releasing all 800 might be a little overwhelming for people.
Yeah, it's like sensory overload. That's another reason why this is sort of good. It's pared down nicely to 30. 30 is like a reasonable thing to go through. It's like, oh, I'm going to play Mega Man 2. Now I'm going to go play Ninja Gaiden.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to play a bit of Final Fantasy. Now I'm going to play a little bit of Super Mario Bros. Like, it's not like, what do I play? What do I do?
No, oh, it's not the Netflix problem of I'm overwhelmed with options.
Yeah, there's too many things. I don't even know where to jump in. Like, I feel like I'm just wasting all of the opportunities right now by choosing anything, really.
So it's a hell of a good move on Nintendo's part, realizing that they have a cachet of nostalgia with a certain generation, a certain audience, and really trying to gear themselves towards it. Even the box art for this thing.
Yeah, it looks just like one of the original box arts, or it was in the style of the original NES box art. Which, if you're old enough, you'll look at it and go, and feel out those warm, fuzzy feelings of nostalgia and go, I have stuff that was packaged that way back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm. So we shall see how it all pans out. But again, November 11th is the slated release date for a suggested retail price of $70. We shall see what that translates to in Canadian funds, because that's currently...
$60.
Sorry, 60?
Yeah, $59.99.
Oh, sorry, my mistake. I'm already trying to, you know, increase it to Canadian funds.
You're adding the Canadian buffer in there, but that's...
Yes, I understand. 60 US. I'm hoping it's only 70 Canadian. I'm not guaranteed that.
Yes.
Woe is me. But we'll move on to the other gargantuan story of the past 7 days in the world of video games. You've likely heard of it.
We talked about it already a little bit at the top of this program as well.
We did. Perhaps you've seen it, read it, just walked around through normal daily life and seen people staring at their phones. Perhaps you've seen your local media doing reports on it, of this new phenomena that is just sweeping the nation. It is Pokemon Go.
Yes, Pokemon Go. Perhaps you've even been playing it yourself. If so, maybe I want to know what team you're on. I chose Team Red. Did I choose wrong? I don't know.
Is it possible to choose wrong?
I don't know. No? Well, I guess it depends on, like, who else is on your side and who you want to play with. I think the most important thing is if you're having fun. But all that aside,
there's been a slate, a litany, if you will, of just ridiculous news items that have come out in the past 7 days because of and relating to Pokemon Go and the phenomena that it is. And
I want to say one of the top questions that seem to be popping up all over the place is, like, where will we be able to find Mewtwo? And most people were thinking of ridiculous things like, oh, what, the moon or Area 51? And a lot of people even suggested, oh, you'd probably have to go to outer space to do it, you know, to be thematically appropriate with the whole origin story of that Pokemon.
Indeed.
But, well, NASA decided to kind of shed some light on that and maybe put a few questions to rest. Unfortunately, I mean, for better or for worse, science sometimes ruins things, but they want to kind of keep your hopes in check just in case you were thinking, oh, I might have to go to outer space to do it. They kind of put any of those fears aside and said, no, that's not necessary, and here's why.
Yes, which is our first official ludicrous leadoff of this week. The fact that NASA chimed in and clarified some questions about Pokemon Go.
Yes.
NASA.
Yes.
NASA had to because they were asked questions by people of whether or not astronauts on the International Space Station would be able to catch, you know, Mew or Mewtwo, the alien Pokemon.
Yes. So they come forward and they said, while the astronauts aboard the International Space Station do have smartphones, they're first of all, not for personal use. Second of all, they don't have internet access. And third of all, well, the internet access part alone is enough to put a kibosh on playing Pokemon Go.
Yes.
But, you know, the thing that they didn't really necessarily cover in this whole thing is that it's sort of based on GPS. GPS doesn't work in outer space. You have to be on a globe for the global part of global positioning system to work. Just, I'm not a scientist, but I know that. And everyone else should know that too.
Yeah, when you're in space, you're kind of subject to a different set of rules and positioning.
Yes.
That satellites aren't really going to help you with because you yourself are inside a satellite.
Yes, though NASA did really push the internet angle. They said, unfortunately, it's not possible for the astronauts to play. And this is what an interview with The Verge, or when The Verge was questioning NASA, they were saying, while there's a small number of smartphones available on the space station, the crew uses them for science activities, not for personal use. The smartphones and other mobile devices on the station also do not have internet connectivity. However, there is, you know, a couple of interesting NASA connections, whether or not they're intentional or not. A number of Pokemon, including Krabby and Rattata, have been spotted at the Kennedy Space Center in Houston, Texas.
Indeed, and even NASA's JPL Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California apparently is also a gym.
Indeed. So, you know, gyms and the Pokestops are just sort of based on where landmarks are, like churches and murals on walls and stuff. So I'm not really surprised that the JPL is one of those things, but it's kind of funny that it's a gym, and you can kind of guess that some people that actually work for NASA may have laid claim to that gym, possibly.
Almost instantly, and they're just having infighting amongst themselves to maintain top spot and claiming of said gym. Also, there's part of me that, because it's the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, for symmetry's sake, I kind of, you know, would hope some element or aspect of Team Rocket to be in play there.
There's no Team Rocket, but if that was a faction, I would have chose Team Rocket 100%.
Of course you would have. Of course you would have.
But
you mentioned how landmarks are Pokemon gyms in Pokemon Go now.
Yes, and I mentioned how sometimes they're churches.
And sometimes they're the wrong churches.
Yes.
Or the right churches, yes, depending on perspective.
Depending on perspective, the correct perspective in this case is, of course, saying this is the wrong church. If you disagree, you are wrong. Yeah. I'm sorry, you are on the wrong side of history here if you agree with these people.
Indeed, you may have come across this item, but likely you haven't. The story that the Westboro Baptist Church itself, the actual church, is a landmark and therefore a Pokemon gym in Pokemon Go.
Yes, and the hilarious thing that happened, like almost as soon as the game was released, and the first time someone discovered this, they took over the gym with a high-level Clefairy named Love is Love to really kind of send that message of like, hey, Westboro Baptist Church, we just took over your gym with a Clefairy named Love is Love.
That really cannot rub be in a thumb in the eye or thumb to the nose in the direction of the Westboro Baptist Church any harder.
No, it couldn't. But instead of just ignoring it, like, you know, adults would, or maybe
reasonable people,
or just, you know, maybe trying to not draw attention to this because you don't want negative publicity or anything. No, that's not the style of the Westboro Baptist Church.
No, they live for negative publicity.
Absolutely.
Because they're absolute monsters of human beings.
Yes, there's part of me that wants to believe that they're just the ultimate trolls and they don't believe anything they're saying. But that's probably not the case.
They seem so devout and resolute in what they're doing.
Yes, in case you have been living under a rock for the past decade, the Westboro Baptist Church are really homophobic, racist hate mongers
who will find any reason to get themselves out there, and they will protest anything and everything, claiming God, you know, saying they know what God does or does not love.
Yes.
Who God does or does not love.
They've picketed numerous celebrities and not celebrities' funerals.
Soldiers' funerals.
Soldiers' funerals. I mean, they're known for their extremely homophobic and hateful signage, and really, like, their slogan is God hates fags. That's the thing that they say all over social media, all over the news, all of that stuff. That's the wording they use. Like, they don't go for any of that love the sinner, hate the sin stuff. No, no, they hate everything about it.
Yes.
And
they don't care.
They don't
absolutely care. Do not care. And if you are an individual from that church, associated with that church whatsoever, well, you are genuinely a despicable human being. Stop listening to our program. We don't want you.
No, we want nothing to do with you. You can go to hell.
You may claim that you'll be in heaven and we're going to hell. And that's fine. We may be, but you'll be there too.
Yeah, you'll be there too.
And we'll laugh.
Yeah, we'll be laughing because I'll actually want to be there. All my friends are there. Where are your friends? Oh, here as well? But you didn't want to be here? Interesting.
Huh.
Interesting how none of what you did mattered. Interesting.
Huh. Made a wrong turn at Albuquerque, eh?
Yes. But, yeah. So anyways, long story short, instead of just letting it die, the Westboro Baptist Church came out swinging hard on social media in response with a couple of super crazy tweets. And, like, they produced a video even with a parody of the Jigglypuff song.
Yes.
That denounces sodomites.
I didn't know Jigglypuff could become a spokes Pokemon for such things.
Yes, the other pink Pokemon that's another cutesy, they're all cutesy things. What am I saying? These are cutesy anthropomorphic weird Japanese monster things that really shouldn't have any sort of political agenda attached to them. Yet here we are.
Amazing what humans can do.
I mean,
we're a great species.
It's like, people thought it was probably just kind of funny and just like, you know, a minor statement to take over the Westboro Baptist Church with a Clefairy called Love is Love.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. That's a slightly political statement. But for the church itself to fire back with, like, they had a Photoshopped sign of Pikachu holding one of their signs with one of their hateful slogans on it as one of their tweets that I saw. And they had another one with, you know, that video I mentioned with the Jigglypuff song. I never watched it. I just heard about it and thought that was bad enough. Didn't need to pollute my mind with that trash. And, yeah.
Now, USA Today and writer Steph Solis from the USA Today came across this and wrote an article online about this. And for the article, she interviewed church elder Steve Drain, who said of this matter and Pokemon Go, quote, "We try to speak whatever language is being spoken." And then later, when asked you know, about the use of Jigglypuff in their media, quote, "Pokemon Go and sin no more, that's what the Lord Jesus Christ said."
Oh yeah, right in the Bible. It was like right under Corinthians.
That seems more like a Leviticus thing.
Oh yeah, Pokemon Go and sin no more.
Yep.
Right.
He later goes on to say, quote, "This little church, as despised and vilified as we are," side note, for good goddamn reason.
Absolutely.
He says, quote, "As despised and vilified as we are, the location of this church will be memorialized throughout eternity. We're willing, by God's grace, to say that homosexuality is wrong, and that's what we've been known for, even though we preach the whole counsel of God." End quote.
Yes.
So they're kind of okay with it being in the game because it just, it's there.
It's there. It's a landmark. It's a place people will seek out. Fun fact, you can actually put in a request to have, you know, things like gyms and Pokestops added and removed. So I feel like rather than giving in to the delusions of the Westboro Baptist Church and, you know, actually going and seeking it out as a gym, I feel like maybe the right thing to do would be to put in a complaint and say, this should probably be removed as a gym because it's sort of an inappropriate slash unsafe place. That's one of the options. I saw the forum on the website today. I think maybe we can post a link to that on our website or somewhere on our social media or mm-hmm. whatever, but our website anyways is thearcadeshow.com.
Or we are on Twitter at The Arcade Show and Facebook, facebook.com/TheArcadeShow. And I mean, I'm of two minds. I mean, yes, have it removed because the Westboro Baptist Church do not give them any sort of prominence or platform to espouse.
Yeah, to spew their hate.
Yeah, their hateful screed. But at the other time, on the other hand, you can have it in there and then constantly have people try to present love and tolerance towards it, but it's not going to do anything.
Yeah, the thing about that is that the Westboro Baptist Church aren't the ones who are going to be accepting that message. Like, you winning their gym, great. Another person's great. The gym has changed hands again. They don't care. They're probably not actually playing the game.
God, no.
They're not going to listen to you when you take over their gym with a Clefairy. They're not going to listen, be like, oh, love is love. Oh, another one of those sinful sodomites trying to play the game. Oh, we got to get our message out to them even more. Like, that's all you're doing is you're just feeding their delusion, in my opinion.
True. There's really no good thing to come out of the Baptist Church anyway, so there is an argument to be made about just disavowing them, but then you're just kind of shuffling it off to the side and...
It's true.
Ignoring it or ignoring something doesn't necessarily...
It doesn't make it go away.
No. They're still going to be there. Would having it in the game, the Westboro Baptist Church as a gym, be a means of generating a conversation about it and just what it is they're about and maybe helping other people who might not be aware understand that they're a bunch of goddamn hate mongers?
Yeah, I guess fair
enough.
Could
that be a point of entry for some people into learning about them?
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's a fair point.
So... 50-50, flip a coin. There's no right or no wrong way to go about having Westboro Baptist Church in Pokemon Go, but just they're goddamn hate mongers. That's all they are. That's all. That is the TLDR of this.
Yes.
But we'll move on now from our ludicrous leadoffs centered around Pokemon Go to talk about other news from Pokemon Go.
Yes. Basically, spoiler alert. We're pretty much just going to talk about Pokemon Go for the rest of the program, but not just the game itself. We're really going to talk about just things that have been happening on the periphery and as a result of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the game necessarily.
No, but we're not going to sit here and compare what Pokemon we've caught, what we have. That's not a thing that's going to happen.
No.
But we will talk about the fact that its success and the phenomena that is and how it's sweeping across the nation and how a free-to-play game, as of reporting from a few days ago, within its first week had made apparently $14 million.
Yes, so people might have been scoffing initially, thinking like, where's the money going to be made in these free-to-play games? Well, microtransactions, that's where the money's always to be made in these games. If you make the game fun enough to play on its own, but also add slight things that will add, I don't know, maybe benefit you as a location or whatnot that you might want to purchase, or just slightly benefit you as a player, there's items you can purchase that you don't need to purchase, but you can if you just want to have a quick shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that people will buy. And if you price them reasonably, people might buy them.
And there's no shortage of things you can buy in Pokemon Go. There's Pokemon Pokeballs, incense, lures, eggs, incubators, probably missing a few things, coins.
You buy the coins to buy the items. And the items are all these different things, like they help you in battles, they're Pokeballs if you don't want to go around to a bunch of Pokestops just to collect them. There's the incubators that help you hatch eggs faster. There's the, like you said, the lures, but there's incense that draws Pokemon to you personally. Then there's lure modules where if you're nearby a Pokestop, you can install a lure module to get Pokemon to spawn near the lure module a little bit closer, a little bit more frequently, which businesses have actually been using if they're by a Pokestop to install there and attract more people to their business, which we'll talk about in a bit. But Yeah, so all of these different things combined have added up to a very successful first week, I would say. I mean, it's not like billions of dollars or anything, but no. Still, $14 million is nothing to sneeze at for 1 week's worth of a free game just going online.
And that is just information cobbled together by research company Superdata. It's not as though Niantic or Pokemon Company or Nintendo are releasing these official figures. This is just what Superdata as a research company can glean. And they say it's already far and away the most successful Pokemon mobile game title, far more successful than Pokemon Shuffle Mobile, which came out last year, which is not a surprise because even when we spoke of Shuffle Mobile last year, we spoke of the fact that it just seemed like an entry point for its developers to figure out a Pokemon mobile game.
Yeah.
And that's really what it was. But again, that's a $14 million figure reported as of a couple days ago. That number has gone up. And again, the game's really only available in a handful of countries. Not Japan yet. Not South Korea yet.
At least not officially.
Not officially.
Now, whether that's or not, true. I mean, people are probably already playing them there. But whether or not the microtransactions will work in those countries or not, I'm not sure. Probably, but I'm not sure.
But the other interesting thing is that the positive impact that the release of Pokemon Go has had on the stock price for Nintendo within the first really day or two, it caused Nintendo's stock price to rise by 25% on the Tokyo Stock Exchange.
Yes.
And since then, it's just continued to go up and up and up. The last reporting I saw as of a couple days ago was that Nintendo's stock price was up 50%.
Which is crazy.
Because of Pokemon Go.
And like the absolutely nuts thing about that is that Nintendo's not even really responsible for Pokemon Go.
No, not even. They only own a third of the Pokemon company.
Yeah.
It is developed by the Pokemon company with Niantic. Nintendo's just like, whatever.
Yeah.
Hands off. They're not co-developing it. They have little to nothing to do with it. But they are in the conversation as being associated with Pokemon because Pokemon always appear on Nintendo devices, handhelds or consoles or what yep. have you. So this is could also then be an entryway for people to come back into Pokemon and play Pokemon games on Nintendo systems. But the other interesting thing I saw that was reported is that Pokemon Go apparently now has more daily active users in the United States, at least, than Tinder.
So instead of swiping left and right, you're swiping up with your Pokeballs to catch Pokemon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So catching a lot of other things with different balls.
Yes. Unlike Tinder. Or also exactly like Tinder.
What?
But yes.
Gross.
So
another way that Pokemon Go could and will make money, we should say, is through an idea that I did not even think of, but you kind of broached, and we'll talk more about it now. The idea of having locations be Pokestops, but it's one thing for a local, business or restaurant or, bookstore or whatever to get in on that action. It's another thing to cut national deals with big multinational corporations. And that's really what it looks like Niantic is going to do, because in a conversation with the New York Times, Niantic CEO John Hankey said that the developer, they already have signed deals with some retail establishments to turn their businesses into sponsored Pokemon Go locations, but they'll announce those locations and those stores, quote, in the future.
Yes. Now, while Niantic is kind of keeping quiet initially about those locations, different reports of like enterprising Redditors and whatnot of people decompiling the code and sort of going backwards from the finished app to try to pull out source code out of it. They've found references to McDonald's in the source code. Now, whether or not that means they were referencing things like a developer whose name was McDonald's, perhaps, I doubt it.
Or the McDonald's twins who were working at Niantic. Maybe, possibly, yeah. Likely not.
Likely not, because I guess in the code block, it was just sort of like referencing things like Pokestops, but they saw the word McDonald's. They also saw a bunch of other weird things that we won't get into right now, but, yeah, so it's, I would expect various McDonald's locations to suddenly become Pokestops or maybe gyms, which is kind of ironic. Just kind of given what McDonald's is, but.
Yes, it's not something you associate with being something called a gym, but, this could be a hell of a good business deal for Niantic. I mean, you have an association with, you know, long well-established businesses like, say, a McDonald's, who have so many locations across, you know, the world.
Yeah.
The world.
As McDonald's, it's an opportunity for you to say, hey, all these people are playing this game. People are going to be walking around trying to, like, find things. Might as well get them to walk into our location. And if their locations can guarantee certain items or whatnot,
mm-hmm.
or if perhaps Pokemon. They, yeah, or like if they might, because it has the AR component, the augmented reality component to it, maybe they might introduce some sort of thing where if you buy this special burger or get a drink or something with this icon on it, if you scan it into your app or something, you might get something too. These are all things that we haven't really seen yet in this game because it's still in its infancy. There's really, I feel like we're in a good early beta release almost, but maybe not the fully fleshed out Pokemon game that it could very well turn into.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, these are all different things that are possibilities.
And that would be a hell of a good sponsorship deal with especially like a McDonald's or, you know, if you sign one with McDonald's, they'll be your, the exclusive quick service fast food burger type restaurant, but then you can turn around and still cut other deals with like, you know, bookstores or, Starbucks, you know, coffee shops.
Yeah.
Or donut shops or ice cream shops or.
Or pizza parlors. Or just rent, like it might be a thing for businesses. I mean, like I said, you can submit a request to have a Pokestop or gym added at a location if you can provide a good enough reason. I mean, whether or not I want people to come into my business is a good enough reason, probably not. But if your business is nearby some other landmark, close enough that you could benefit, it seems like you might as well try to benefit. As we've seen, actually, like I can say personally, without getting into this one particular story that we saw in the New York Post.
Because the New York Post is even reporting on the phenomena that is Pokemon Go and how it's sweeping across New York.
Yeah, but even if we go locally, I was at the mall, even just today when recording, we record on Thursday, I was at the mall just Thursday evening, and I was by a Starbucks that was by a food court, and I saw probably one out of every two people was on their phone, and I glanced at a couple people's phones as I walked by, and Pokemon Go was open on their phones. I'm like, huh, and they probably did the same for me. But I noticed that by the Starbucks, there was a Pokestop, and it had a lure module installed in it. So that it was, like, I stood by there for like 3 minutes, and I got three Pokemon.
Nice.
It was like a huge number of Pokemon compared to what I normally get. And I was just like, I could just hang out here and get Pokemon all day if I had nothing but time on my hands if I wanted to do that. But someone at Starbucks probably thought, this is a good idea. I'm going to install one of these lure modules here. I'm going to spend money on this item and get it installed here so people will come by our store more often. And that is one of the ways I think these types of items are going to help businesses. Very much like what this New York Post article was reporting on.
Indeed, that a pizza parlor in New York called Linzio Pizza Bar, they tried to cash in on this phenomena, and apparently they paid $10 to just get a bunch of lures that just drew a slew of Pokemon to their establishment. But because of that, and because their establishment had so many Pokemon, that it caused just foot traffic and business to surge by roughly 75% over what it would normally be for that, you know, period of time, with manager Sean Benedetti telling the New York Post, quote, "We had people come down, sit down and get a couple beers and play the Pokemon game." And that's, there's the appeal.
Yeah.
Like trivia night, karaoke. No, Pokemon Go is now going to be a hook for people into your establishment.
Yeah. Let's walk down to Lanisi's, get a slice of pizza and a beer and just, you know, catch some Pokemon because they got those lures installed over there.
Yeah. It's just going to be a casual thing that, you know, groups of friends go do.
Yeah. Brilliant. Great idea for businesses.
Absolutely. And I wonder if Niantic will get in on this and offer two businesses a special kind of lure or lure module or whatever to...
Or a lure subscription.
Ah.
Some sort of thing where, like, it's $10 a month for your business to get a Pokemon lure. It's like, and get a Pokestop at your location.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I'd do it.
Oh, hell yeah.
If I was running a bar or like a pizza place or something like that, yeah, I'd do it, of course. Any kind of place where people would sit down and congregate, yeah. Might as well.
And again, if you're just offering it to other commercial businesses at that scale, $10 is all you really have to charge because there's so many thousands of business, hundreds of thousands of businesses out there in the world where these, you know, in the territories which have the game already and will soon have the game that will totally get in on that action.
I mean, you're going to get the people who don't necessarily go inside, who just kind of hang out on the street. Sure, but is it really that harmful? Because for all the people who are just okay with hanging out on the street, there's going to be enough people that just go, you know what, let's just go inside. Let's get a beer. Yeah, yeah. It's fine.
You know what, let's sit down. You know, whatever. It's cold, I'm hungry, whatever. Let's just sit down for like half an hour.
Yeah. Catch some Pokemon while we're here and it'll be fun.
Yeah, we'll have something to eat, whatever. That's fine. That becomes an event.
Yeah.
That becomes an occasion, and I don't know if Niantic intended that.
No, but it's brilliant. It's a great, you know, opportunity to, you know, have another venue of business, provided that people keep playing this game for a while.
True, that is going to be a challenge. I mean, it's the phenomena, the craze of Pokemon Go is burning hot and it's burning fast right now, but could it flame out? That is always the fear.
Yeah.
Although given that it's still yet to officially roll out to so many other countries officially.
Yeah.
That can always just be something. And then later updates can bring new aspects to the game, the app as well. But,
yeah. Well, I mean, if we go back for a second to that one Redditor that decompiled the game and was doing some unpacking and sleuthing, he did say that he did find, when he was unpacking the game data, he found some unusual things about game mechanics that are not currently available on the user side, including legendary monsters, a trading system, four additional types of berries and incense, an item called Sweet Honey, and natures like Stoic and Raider that might have effects later on.
Interesting.
So whatever any of that stuff means, we're not sure, but it sounds like there's no shortage of things that they have planned for this game. So
every so often when, you know,
yeah, when they roll updates out and more interesting mechanics come out, it eventually will turn into a thing where you can just walk down the street and get a notification that you're being challenged to a Pokemon battle. And then you just look around and see someone pointing at you. All of a sudden, we are living in the Pokemon cartoon. We're literally living in the Pokemon cartoon now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that, like.
That is coming. That right future there, is coming.
That right there is something that I don't know. Like.
Can we prepare for that?
It could be a thing that's here to stay. Like, you could literally be, I'm the gym leader here. I am now the gym leader of this area.
And then you legitimately have to defend the gym.
Yeah.
When someone is challenging you.
Yeah. And that's already sort of the case. But if it becomes more personal like that, yeah, there's all sorts of different mechanics that they could and probably will roll out. And it will keep people interested, I think.
It certainly will. And because this is such a popular phenomenon right now, Hollywood is going to shamelessly cash in on it as well
I would almost say that this is one of the fastest times they've done this. I mean, normally it takes probably at least 2 weeks to a month before you start hearing about things like, oh, movie deals have been signed.
Mm-hmm. But Angry Birds took a while for it to become a movie property. With that movie just releasing this year, deal was signed, oh God, months after it was initially released. But, the news coming out on July 12th, on Tuesday, July 12th, via Deadline.com, a Hollywood entertainment industry, news source, saying that, given that the, success of Pokemon Go has been nothing short of staggering, there are Hollywood studios that are lining up to try and land the rights to make a live action film based on the very popular, property of Pokemon. Live action. Now, we've seen Pokemon movies. There was one that came out to North American theaters, actually did pretty well during the initial Pokemon craze in the late 90s.
Yeah, the Mewtwo movie or whatever.
Yes. 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago. But there's been a number of Pokemon movies to come out since. Maybe not doing as well as the first one, but that was at the height of the craze initially. But could you imagine what a new Pokemon movie would do if it's live action?
Yeah. It could be very, and I mean, if it's live action and if they make it look sort of like Pokemon Go, like where the person has a smartphone and that's their Pokédex and the only difference is that the Pokemon exist in real life as opposed to through augmented reality.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's like perfect synergy.
I think so. And that is the level of familiarity some people now have with the Pokemon property. Also, given the cross-generational appeal of Pokemon Go now, it will attract could more likely attract our generation and younger generations as well. Yep. So that, now granted, it has every chance of being an absolutely just god-awful dreck of a movie.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Given that it's, a shameless cash-in on something that's very hot and very popular right now, as we've seen with the Angry Birds movie and also the upcoming Emoji movie.
Oh my God. Yes.
Because
I forgot that was a thing.
In case you forgot that was a thing, go back to forgetting that's a thing. Just, this was a brief moment. It's a thing, but delete it from your memory banks and live a more fulfilling life as a result.
Yes. But speaking of living a more fulfilling life, walking around is typically good for you, doctors say. And I mean, Pokemon Go is sort of helping that, but it's sort of a little bit unwieldy to just kind of have your cell phone just in your hand all the time.
Certainly it can lead to some problems, which we'll talk about a bit later on the show, but, yes, it's a little awkward to hold and maybe just don't always want it out to be alerted when there's a Pokemon nearby.
Yeah. And then, wearable technology is sort of a thing now where like lots of people like having their different smartwatches, Fitbits, step counters, whatever else, fitness trackers of any kind that also function as phone notifiers and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. And even before all that, there was the Google Glass
attempt
at wearable technology that
didn't do that well.
Certainly not.
But wearables are nothing new really. And well, Niantic sort of had a plan, I think, from the start to roll this out, but given the extreme unforeseen success of the game, I don't think they planned on making enough units of these things, which was the Pokemon Go accessory, which is that Pokeball-looking wristwatch type thing.
Yes, the Pokemon Go Plus.
Yes, that's what it's called. So they were initially supposed to be priced at $35, but, and it's not launched yet. It's sort of in the pre-sale phase, but people are selling their pre-promised devices that they bought or will buy for $35 when they come out already on eBay, and they're going for more than $100 already.
Some have gone for over $200 because apparently if the pre-orders for these things have all sold out.
Yes, like totally sold out.
like through the major retailers, Amazon, Best Buy, GameStop,
probably Walmart,
Walmart, Toys R Us, various other retail entities. Some eBay auctions for, you know, pre-orders for these Pokemon Go Plus devices have even gone for upwards of $385. Gah.
Which is nuts. In case you weren't aware of what the value of money is, or you just have too much money and can't relate to us common folks. That is a lot of money.
Well, you're one of those Rockefellers I've heard so much about.
Oh man. Yes. But,
so again, those devices are supposed to ship on July 31st, but it sounds like they're going to be in short supply.
Yes.
And this could be a thing where there's just an absolute rush to the store to try and get them. And they become a hot commodity, like a very popular toy item at Christmas time.
Yeah, it's like this year's Tickle Me Elmo.
Or Cabbage Patch Kids, or the Wii.
Yeah. But one other final good thing about Pokemon Go, I think this... Before we get into some of the darker side of things that have sort of happened.
To balance it out, the yin and the yang.
Yes, it was only a matter of time, but yes, there is a Twitch Plays Pokemon Go channel that exists because, you know, what may be a joke to some people is real to Twitch. And the interface is kind of cumbersome and complicated, but it's kind of awesome that it's a thing. I mean, I will relent that and, it's kind of ridiculous that it's just a real thing.
I'm surprised it happened. Well, I am, and I'm not surprised that it happened as quickly as it did, given that this is such an overwhelming phenomena. I mean, it stands to reason that it would have gotten its own Twitch Plays so quickly, but really? This quickly?
Yeah.
My brain can understand, but also can't reconcile that. But the FAQ for this Twitch Plays Pokemon Go states that, quote, Twitch started playing in Central Park of New York City. Where they are now is anyone's guess. Apparently the location of the game is spoofed, so apparently someone is not actually physically navigating the world.
Yes. I mean, that could be really dangerous, and also not really... you know, feasible given the scope and scale of what Twitch Plays normally is. But it's kind of interesting the way that they did it because, you know, normally those Twitch Plays things are sort of, they have, you know, the different directions mapped to just words like up, down, left, right. Mm-hmm. And they have the buttons mapped to the, you know, the actual buttons like A, B, X, Y, R, L kind of thing. But that doesn't work with a touchscreen. So they have a grid based system, as well as I think a few different other commands like throw egg or throw Pokeball and like do whatever else. And they have like a whole other subset of commands for where you want to navigate to because, you know, obviously you can't, like it's walking based. So they have to kind of all agree on like go north, north, north kind of thing. But yeah, it's kind of interesting that it's a thing and it became a thing so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But,
so I wonder where this virtual Pokemon Go walker will eventually end up. Like, are they going to make him walk across the United States?
Is it going to be like Forrest Gump? Is his character going to grow a big beard and just eventually get tired and say, I'm going to go home now? Tired. Going home now.
potentially. And that's just how they end the Twitch Plays Pokemon Go. Because there's no discernible end to Pokemon Go.
No. That's also sort of like one of the other brilliant aspects of it. It's got all of the trappings of the addictive MMORPG. Like, you know, like the World of Warcrafts and whatnot. But, yeah.
There's no finite, definite end to it.
No.
You just keep going out there and keep collecting Pokemon and keep trying to acquire more, you know, specific type Pokemon candy.
Yeah, try to be the very best, like no one ever was.
That's true. That is very true. If you want to see what a Twitch Plays version of Pokemon Go looks like, we have a link to it in the show notes for this week's episode, right there on our website, The Arcade Show. com, along with notes for every other news item that we have spoken about on this week's episode, which there's a lot of items. And as we said, we're now going to get into some of the less savory news items about Pokemon Go that have come out as a result of its popularity. This first one taking us down all the way down under.
Yes. There was a bit of a thunder down under, excuse the terrible pun. And it's not really a pun since it wasn't really a storm. Or maybe it was a storm in some people's eyes. A storm of people who were, for some reason, led into a park.
A public park.
A public park in the middle of the night.
Indeed. It's in Sydney, Australia, there's a suburb simply called Rhodes. And in this Rhodes area of Sydney, Australia, there's an area along a waterfront which has a big IKEA store, a big shoppingplex, and there's also a public park called Peg Patterson Park because Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers.
Yes.
And that's how they name their parks.
Yes, with like the most confusing tongue twisters you can possibly muster.
But in and around this area and in and around the park and the waterfront and the shopping area, there's a lot of condo buildings. And so what's been happening is that the park actually ends up becoming a Pokestop or Pokestop. And so it's been attracting, you know, a lot of people night after night after night. So much so that it was, I believe, on Wednesday or Thursday night of, or sorry, on Tuesday night of this week. Gang. Pardon me. Days, you know, in Australia, time change, hard to figure out, but Tuesday night this week, that apparently over 1,000 people came to Peg Patterson Park, which is a Pokestop. A thousand. And they were there at midnight, and essentially it just became a large mass gathering of people, music playing, you know, just talking, you know, people carrying on. But what happened is that the residents of the condo buildings surrounding this park, they got fed up with this, you know, large gathering of people and the noise in the middle of the night. So they took to throwing water balloons and eggs at the people in the park to try and get them to disperse.
Yes. And eventually getting to the point where the police turned up and they were issuing tickets to the illegally parked cars just outside and warning all the people in the crowd that they better disperse or face $200 fines. That's Australian dollars, obviously. Which, yeah, it's understandable, but
1,000 people.
Yeah, it's
just at night.
Yeah, I mean, that's just speaks to how many people are playing this game. And yeah, I understand, like, people want to get to the Pokestops, but it really sucks if you're living around one, which is why there is that handy feature that you can say, no, this Pokestop is like on my property. I don't want people coming here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a valid thing that you're allowed to submit. So just a tip to people, we're going to, again, like I said, you'll expect a link to it soon on our social media presence, likely.
Mm-hmm. We'll also put it in our show notes.
Yes, of course. But yeah.
So 1,000 people just gathering middle of the night, being peaceful.
Yeah, being peaceful, being loud and disruptive, but it's like, it's almost like, I imagine, like, if people are just kind of like hanging out, playing music, having fun at this Pokestop, it's almost like a music festival kind of attitude, but for no reason almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a thing that's always going to be there.
Is this going to be the phenomena that will help bring about a new era of world peace?
Just Pokemon Go.
You know, keep calm in Pokemon Go. That's it.
Maybe. Just use common sense, people. If you're going to be playing Pokemon Go and there's like a park by a bunch of apartment buildings, don't go there in the middle of the night.
No, that's usually a bad idea.
I mean, it's not fair for anyone. And honestly, it's probably not safe either. Just don't go Pokemon going in the middle of the night.
And be aware of your surroundings. This is another thing we have to advocate because, as you said, it's very easy for people to walk around, and we see them in our lives now with the popularity of this game on people's phones, that they walk around staring at their phones almost oblivious to what is around them, what they are surrounded by, what's going on around them. And unfortunately, some less than savory characters in the world have taken to taking advantage of Pokemon Go, and instead of finding Pokestops to, you know,
to collect the items and whatever that the Pokestops will give you,
mm-hmm.
they've actually taken to using these Pokestops as like a means to take items from the people who are trying to get items from the Pokestop, but not items from a game, items from their pockets and on their person and from their wallets.
Rob them.
Yes, that's the correct term. You know, at gunpoint.
This happened in O'Fallon, Missouri. O'Fallon, Missouri, where I sure hope they have an old Irish police chief.
Oh, man. If they don't, I'll be disappointed.
Again, O'Fallon, Missouri.
Yes.
The news came from a spokesperson for the O'Fallon Police Department who spoke to Gizmodo that apparently over the course of a couple days, four men had been using the game to find players who'd come by a specific Pokestop at a specific location and then rob them using a handgun. The last robbery occurred Sunday morning around 2 a.m. By men who were in a black BMW before they were eventually apprehended by police. Law enforcement officials saying that the criminals would use the game to find their victims by anticipating where people might go through popular Pokestops and then going there as well and finding them and then
robbing them at gunpoint.
Certainly. So the criminals have been caught. They've been arrested. There have been three individuals arrested and named at this point. All of them 17 or 18 years old. Many of them facing charges of robbery in the first degree and armed criminal action, which is a felony and an unclassified felony in the state of Missouri. They're held on bond. It may have been met, but was set at $100,000 cash only.
Yes.
So be aware of where you are and who's around you.
Yes. Like the example of, on the other hand, there were two Marines who were playing Pokemon Go who were not committing crimes, but they used Pokemon Go and inadvertently helped to kind of stop one.
They did. This story came out of Fullerton, California via ABC7, which is the ABC affiliate in Los Angeles, and it happened on Tuesday this week. And the two Marines, they are Seth Ortega and Javier Soch. They were walking down downtown Fullerton, California around 10:30 in the morning playing Pokemon Go. They had their phones out. It was open. That's what they were doing just as they were walking down the street. But then one of them, Javier Soch, said that his game froze and he happened to look up for a moment and noticed a man carrying a red plastic rose who they then watched this creepy man with a red plastic rose approach a woman and her three kids. As you can imagine, this frightened the woman, and so she took off. And she called 911, while the two Marines kind of kept an eye on the guy to see what he was up to. And then they saw this creepy man with a red plastic rose approach another woman who had two children, and they were both playing Pokemon Go. One of the Marines explained to ABC7, quote, "We saw the gentleman go approach them again. At this point, my roommate and I start walking across the street and the gentleman actually walks up and touches one of the children, one of the boys, his toe and starts walking his way up to the knee. At that point, I'm running across the street and the gentleman who was walking down the street does the same thing. So the children ran off to their mother and so the Marines stayed with the man, essentially making a citizen's arrest until police officers arrive. Then it's determined that the creepy man was arrested for child annoyance, which I didn't know was a charge, but America.
Yeah, and then they also said that this man was, they discovered that he had an outstanding warrant for attempted murder in Sonoma, California. Attempted murder, so not only did they stop this guy from potentially molesting this child, but he was also, you know, an attempted murderer. So the man would be extradited to Sonoma for the attempted murder warrant. good on those two Marines.
Yes.
Like, definitely a tip of the hat to them.
Certainly. So Pokemon Go.
Yeah, all because of Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
But the kids were playing it too, which is kind of interesting. But
not surprising, but hopefully if you are a parent out there with a child playing Pokemon Go, really talk to them about appropriate and inappropriate places to play Pokemon Go.
Absolutely. In particular, if you're visiting some place like the Holocaust Memorial Museum or the Arlington National Cemetery, show a little bit of respect. Put your phone away.
Yeah, don't. I mean, they might be landmarks in the game, Pokemon or Pokestops or whatever, but just
it's
just
not appropriate. I mean, there's been complaints raised by people who work at these or represent these two particular establishments. I'm sure others have as well, but like we saw these ones kind of come across the wire because of other kind of more interesting reasons. But they've just requested that they refrain from catching Pokemon while you're visiting these things. These are just, you know, represent dead people. Like, what are you doing?
And in the case of the Arlington National Cemetery in Arlington, Virginia, it's a major national cemetery for soldiers and armed service members. Because of the popularity of Pokemon Go, forcing the Arlington National Cemetery to take to Twitter and say, quote, "We do not consider playing Pokemon Go to be appropriate decorum on the grounds of the ANC," end quote.
Yes. And furthermore, I guess there was another interesting thing, like whether or not it was intentional or not, I highly doubt it because of the random nature of Pokemon that spawn wherever. But someone was playing Pokemon Go at the Holocaust Museum
In Washington, D.C.,
yes. And they found a coughing, you know, the poison gas Pokemon coughing in the Holocaust Museum. So you can imagine the unfortunate fallout that that caused. I mean, obviously that's not good. That's like really... really bad.
That's about as insensitive as can be with this game.
Yes. Now, I doubt it was intentional, but it also sort of raises some interesting flags, like maybe, you know, just some of these places should be no-goes, no-go zones for Pokemon, no-go zones for, you know, just landmarks and whatnot. Like, maybe there shouldn't be Pokestops at these places.
And,
is that really appropriate?
And that's a fair thing. And I think as, you know, the days and weeks and months go by, that we'll see some of these places request to have their status as whatever, Pokestop or, you know, landmark or gym or whatever rescinded. And kind of, you know, as the game gets out there and just further tweaks are made, because as you've said a couple times already and still is true, it is a very, very young game.
Yes. Like, while I don't want to say it's in beta, because it has been officially released in several countries, it still sort of feels like it's in beta. Like, it's, like, there's a bunch of features there, but it feels like there could be way more.
And this game is going to get updates, and I'm sure there will be, you know, organizations like the Arlington National Cemetery, amongst other, you know, major national cemeteries, landmarks, churches, or what have you, that request to have their presence in the game adjusted.
Yes, absolutely.
And rightfully so. And so we'll see how that all shakes down and, you know, what happens to the gym leaders or the people leading those gyms if something is taken off the game. You know, a landmark that was a gym, but for whatever reason it gets taken away. Is that no longer a factor? I don't know. We'll see how it all plays out, but there's still much more to learn about Pokemon Go as we go forward, because this is just a phenomenon we have not seen in video gaming for I don't know how long.
No, I mean, like, honestly, I'm kind of shocked And it sort of reminds me of the initial Pokemania that hit like about 20 years ago.
The difference being that was over a longer time period.
Yeah, it was a longer time period. And well, I mean, honestly, the internet is to blame for the wildfire spread of this.
Yeah.
And if there was the internet back then, it probably would have been a similar kind of spread. But also, like, we probably would have, like, it's not fair to compare it because there's just the technologies and everything are just different all around. But yeah, I mean, in some ways, it's almost like the closest analog I can think of, like, Pokemania, like, this is almost like Pokemania 2.0.
Mm-hmm. I think the only difference would be that, you know, the Pokemon game, the first one came out, I think in like 96 in Japan.
Yeah.
And then took about a year or so to come to North America. But now, given the fact that the, you know, app has been released officially in Australia, New Zealand, and whatever else, but the people who really want it can find a workaround, then means almost the whole world could have it if they wanted.
Which they pretty much do, it sounds like.
And continually causing, you know, problems with the servers.
Yes.
Because Niantic is probably like, oh shit.
Yeah. Oh man, we didn't anticipate this. And I was thinking about it, like, on the one hand, they could just, you know, geoban people. I mean, they have all of the map data available. They're like, their games are based on map stuff. So they basically could very easily check if you're not in any of the approved locations and then just say, hey, we're not servicing your area yet. Come back when the game is released. But then I thought, it's like, but then if they do that, they're running the risk of just turning people off entirely. So like, if I installed the app and found out that I couldn't play it in Canada, I'd probably just uninstall it and forget about it personally.
That's but true.
The fact that I'm just able to play it, I mean, even with like, you know, server interruptions and whatnot here and there, I'm still okay with that for now.
And once there comes an official release in Canada, well,
yeah,
so much the better.
Then. Yeah, exactly. I'll get it. I'll officially get it at that point.
You certainly will. And so will many, many others when it comes to Canada, when it comes to Mexico, other Latin American countries, other European countries, also Japan.
Yep.
Can you imagine the frenzy that's going to happen in Japan when this releases?
Yes.
Can you imagine the strain on servers when this releases in Japan?
Yes. Yes, I can. Hopefully at that point, Niantic will have their ducks in a little bit of a better row. I hope. For their sake.
I feel sorry for their hardware side. People who have to just, I'm almost envisioning Scotty on the, you know, in the engine room of the Enterprise, just being like,
it won't work. She can't take anymore.
She can't do it, Captain. She just doesn't have the power.
Come on, Scotty. You gotta get me a little bit more power. I need it up, Scotty.
I'll see what I can do, Captain.
Yes. It's the Enterprise.
Hello, computer.
But
terrible Scotty impressions aside, that is quite a lot of Pokemon news for this week. We have one last item, one last section to get through before we finish up for this week. It is not Pokemon Go related. We apologize, but the game is just new and just came out within the past week or so. And
there's been so much news about it.
Constantly. Yes. I have not seen it dominate the news cycle or one game dominate the news cycle like this in, as I've said,
in a long time.
I don't know when. In such a concentrated amount of time, too.
Yes. Like, it's been super crazy, super fast.
Coming from all different news outlets, too. Be it Associated Press, be it New York Post writing about things, be it, you know, Forbes, Business Wire, whomever, Deadline.
Yeah. And like, obviously, the common game publications, like, you know, the Kotakus and the Polygons and
Verge, GameSpot, yeah. Verge,
like all the various
Game Informers, everyone. So it is a phenomenon, absolute worldwide phenomena. We don't know how long it's going to last like that, though.
No, I mean, everything eventually has to kind of settle down.
It does.
But what will settling down mean?
That's a good question. Like, what is the plateau point for Pokemon Go?
And like, will it just be sort of like, okay, everyone has the game now. Now everyone's still playing it constantly. We're just maybe not going to report news about it as often. Or will it just be like, are we just eventually still going to expect some sort of Pokemon Go related news every day still?
That can't still happen, can it?
I mean, I don't know. Like, we'll have to see. I mean, we're a week in, I guess a couple weeks in, depending on where you're coming from.
But it's really the past week that it's taken off in earnest.
Yeah. So we'll have to see. Maybe talk to us next week and we'll see what, tune in next week and we'll try not to have another Pokemon Go centered show. Probably won't do that. But if there is anything big that comes up, we will obviously have to talk about it. But.
Oh, certainly. And this has just taken the world by storm. So many different news stories coming from so many different angles. We certainly would have been remiss to not discuss it or discuss them and bring them to you on this week's show. But as I said, we have one last order of business to get to. It is not Pokemon Go related because that's only a week old or so, but we have to talk about much older things right now. It is our Blast from the Past segment where we bring you two items, or sometimes two. Most often it's two. Sometimes it's one. This week it's two. Items that are of multiple years in age, celebrating milestone anniversaries of this week. One is 15 years old, the other 25 years old, and one of them actually is video game related, somewhat.
Yes, I think we could probably talk about that one first.
All right, well then we'll talk about a movie which came out July 13th of the year 2001. It is the first and last major theatrical release for this very popular RPG, JRPG franchise from Square Enix, Squaresoft, Square Pictures. This is Final Fantasy The Spirits Within.
Yes, it was a 2001 theatrical CGI movie directed by Hironobu Sakaguchi, who is the creator of the Final Fantasy series and has normally been like the producer director of, up to that point anyway, he was the producer director of, I think, all of the games up to that point. And I think it was the first photorealistic CGI film as well. Like, you know how like for a while that was a thing that they were trying to do with CGI films, going with photorealism, where we saw Beowulf and a few of those other movies.
Polar Express. A Christmas Carol, the Jim Carrey CG one.
Yep. But, Final Fantasy Spirits Within was the first. It was a pretty good voice cast, actually, including Alec Baldwin, Donald Sutherland, James Woods, Ving Rhames. I mean, some big names in there. Steve Buscemi. By all rights, it should have been a success.
It should have been a success.
I saw it in the theater. I was a little bit disappointed because it wasn't based on any game. It just felt like they just had the name Final Fantasy tacked on just to try to get people in. It honestly could have just been called The Spirits Within. I mean, it would have probably just served its purpose just as well, but, it tanked in the theater, tanked in the box office.
Tanked in no small part because the cost of production for the film just kept escalating and escalating and escalating, because when you're trying to make a photorealistic CG movie in the, late 90s to early 2000s, that's a very expensive proposition.
Yes, it took a staff, according to the Wikipedia page, it took a staff of 200 people and 4 years to complete. At the time, before computers were powerful, you needed things like render farms when you were rendering down 3D animations. And their render farm consisted of 960 workstations, which those 960 workstations were tasked with rendering each of the film's 141,964 frames. So that's a lot of numbers right there. And the other final number that's the most important one is the cost that it cost to make the film, which was approximately $137 million, of which it only recovered $85 million. Ooh. So it was a box office failure, huge bomb.
Certainly.
And it is directly blamed for the folding of square pictures. That's why square pictures didn't have any more movies after this one.
I wonder why. You have one chance, and you failed.
And you failed.
You failed miserably. And I think in large part because, A, well, it wasn't a Final Fantasy-centric story.
No, I mean, it was Final Fantasy-esque in that I could have seen the story in this movie being the story in a Final Fantasy game, should a game had been made instead of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like, it had things that they had vaguely touched on, ideas similar to this in things like Final Fantasy VII and whatnot, you know, with a live stream kind of thing. But yeah, I think they let down a lot of Final Fantasy fans, because I think Final Fantasy fans were expecting more of like a traditional Final Fantasy movie with various, you know, characters that, or if not characters that they would have recognized, archetypes of characters that they would have recognized. And we didn't really see that. It was sort of more like a, almost like just a general science fiction movie rather than JRPG fantasy.
Certainly. And that's long been the knock against it, that it really had no touchstones to the franchise, video game franchise. But if you think about it, with a movie that costs, you know, almost $140 million to make, you perhaps almost need to broaden your appeal for the movie you're making to try and attract a larger swath of the movie-going audience. Calling it Final Fantasy and trying to tie it in and relate it to the popular JRPG franchise is great, but that is one specific segment of a movie-going population.
Yes. I guess it would have the opposite effect for people who don't know anything about Final Fantasy. They might just think, oh, is this just a video game movie? I don't want to watch that.
Exactly.
It's like a video game movie that's 3D animated. Like, ugh, why do I want to watch that? I don't know anything about Final Fantasy.
Is this one of the games? I know nothing about this.
Yeah, like that's why I always thought that it should have just been called The Spirits Within. It's like from the director of the final, like several Final Fantasy games comes this new epic sci-fi fantasy movie.
Mm-hmm.
The first photorealistic, like, 3D animated film. Like, it had all sorts of great selling points to it. And it wasn't a terrible movie. Like, I mean, it was a little bit bland and not the most memorable movie, but it wasn't terrible.
Well, there's certainly been worse movies. And we've certainly paid money to see worse movies.
Absolutely.
But, I don't know, the story felt kind of off. And, I mean, it's a very Japanese story.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of spirits and aliens and whatever life forces doesn't necessarily play too well to a North American audience either.
No, but I mean, it still could have had the same kind of appeal of like other Japanese stories that saw at the very least like a dedicated cult following, which this movie I don't even think has.
No, it certainly doesn't. And the other curious thing is that even the video game world of Final Fantasy, I don't think it's ever referenced or touched on The Spirits Within.
No, I mean, well, Final Fantasy, it's sort of tricky because every game is its own sort of self-encapsulated
True.
World where, with the exception of games that have sequels, the games themselves don't reference each other except through loose references like a chocobo might exist in more than one game and it's just never really questioned.
Or a Moogle or whatnot, yeah. Yes. But there hasn't been any sort of attempt to bring The Spirits Within to a video game
yeah,
existence.
That's true.
It's kind of on its own as a one-off movie that is very much, an oddity to a certain extent from 2001, attempting to do a full-on photorealistic CG movie. I mean, credit to the producers and the directors. It was a very ambitious project. I mean, given 15 years of advancement in technology, yes, it does look a bit dated. That's inevitable when you're trying to make something that looks cutting edge with the technology of the time.
Yeah. But I mean, having said that, it doesn't look anywhere near as bad as some video games from the era.
That is true. That is very true.
Or other 3D animations of the era either. I mean, I would dare say it looks better than a lot of the mainframe stuff, as cutting edge as mainframe was as well. A lot of that stuff didn't age well either.
No, that is also true. That's a fair point. But if you've never heard of it and this is the first time, well then, certainly check out Final Fantasy The Spirits Within. But another movie that we have to talk about is celebrating its 25th anniversary on July 19th. It is a sequel to a film which came out just a few years before that. This one sees the return of two beloved kind of airhead type oblivious rocker characters as they embark on a bogus journey. This is Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Yes, the second in the film franchise, Bill and Ted, which was the sequel to the 1989 classic Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which saw Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter return as
William Ted, S. Preston.
Well, Keanu Reeves as Ted Theodore Logan, as well as Alex Winter as William Bill S. Preston, Esquire. Not quite sure why he's Esquire. I don't think he's a lawyer or anything, but that was the joke, I would imagine. They were just kind of airheads, and they had hoity-toity names.
Yes, in San Dimas, California, attending, I believe, San Dimas High. And, you know, the story where they formed their band Wild Stallions, as established in the first movie, that becomes a huge hit, you know, causes world peace. And
yeah, their music influences all the generations to come, blah, blah, blah.
And George Carlin speaks of them highly in Far Distant Futures, but this one sees an evil presence from the future travel back to the past to try and disrupt Wild Stallions from ever becoming that, cemented band that goes about to cause the harmonious future.
Yes.
And in so doing, Bill and Ted get knocked off and they die and go on a bogus journey with the Grim Reaper.
Yep.
Death himself, who for some reason is modeled after, like, to me it's always looked like, you know, Death from Ingmar Bergman's film, The Seventh Seal.
Yes, exactly.
Which maybe that's intentional.
It probably is intentional. The 80s were a weird time.
They really were, but so they go on this, you know, this journey with Death and
I should say the early 90s as well. Well, it was a weird time. It all sort of rolled over from the
80s. But as I said, they go on this journey with Death to try and come back to the real world, clear their names, save their girlfriends, blah, blah, blah. But they go on the typical journey of challenging, Death to a, Death to a game of something, which for some people would be chess, checkers or whatever. Instead, in like typical, like stupid teenager fashion, they challenge him to Twister.
Yes.
And like Guess Who and like
other dumb 90s
contemporary board games.
Yeah.
And they end up winning and they come back with Death as their newfound friend. And somehow the story goes on, gets a bit weird, and then they meet aliens who are named Station for some reason. Drugs? I don't know.
Probably drugs. But yeah, it was a very interesting piece of the time. Had a couple of interesting musical cameos, one by Primus, who were just kind of like just starting to hit the airwaves with their first album, I believe, at the time. And then the guitar player, Jim Martin of Faith No More, you know, with his big glasses, mm-hmm. making an appearance. And
Steve Vai, I think he did
a big guitar solo as well, yeah.
Imagine that.
Steve Vai doing a guitar solo? That's unheard of. But there's like the soundtrack is a good cross section of big overdone hair rock of the time. including bands like Slaughter, Winger, Kiss.
Oh god, Winger.
Steve Vai. King's X.
Now I'm just imagining Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah.
With, Stewart? Who is the fan of Winger?
Yeah, he had the Winger shirt. They had Metallica and AC/DC. Stewart had the Winger shirt. Very much of the same era, Beavis and Butthead, Bill and Ted. That type of, those type of characters. Mm-hmm. you know, if you're not familiar with Bill and Ted, it's worth watching them.
It is.
They're fun movies.
They're fun. They're fun, campy, unnecessary, kind of, you know, airhead type, you know, rocker comedies.
They're silly movies.
They are.
They're fun. Like, definitely worth watching.
And there's long been talk of a third Bill and Ted movie. Apparently it's kind of been stuck in development hell for, you know, a few years, but apparently there's a script that both Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves agree on. Apparently funding's in place, just it hasn't quite launched yet. Everyone wants to do it, which is kind of surprising considering it's 20 years on. And 25 years on, rather.
Alex Winter is like kind of become a noted documentarian, and Keanu Reeves is sort of like a big star now.
He is. He's, I mean, three generations of his children could just exist and never have to work because he's got all the Matrix money.
Absolutely.
So he could self-fund a third Bill and Ted movie if he wanted.
Yeah.
But it would still kind of be somewhat hard to do given that George Carlin is no longer around to appear in it. And he...
Rufus.
I know. That's one of the things that I never quite squared away in my head is, why is George Carlin in this thing?
George Carlin did a lot of weird things, though. Like, let's not forget that he was Mr. Conductor on Shining Time Station.
Point received.
Yes. So, let's just keep that in the back of our hat. Just for safekeeping.
Fair. And all that. Along with Ringo Starr.
Yes. Someone else who doesn't really make sense in that role. But hey.
90s.
90s.
They were a weird time. But, so yes, certainly we recommend checking out and watching, possibly for the first time, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey from July 19th, 1991. And for curiosity's sake, Final Fantasy The Spirits Within, which sadly did nothing to dispel the notion that you really can't make translate a video game property to a movie.
Yeah, even though they weren't translating a video game property. But no, they actually weren't.
No, there's no crossover between them.
It was Final Fantasy in name only. And even still, it shouldn't have been a Final Fantasy movie.
Well, I mean, hey, there was Dr. Cid in the game.
Yeah, so a light reference to just the series, a little bit giving a slight nod. Great. Good job. Final Fantasy, stamp of approval. Great.
Nevertheless, Final Fantasy The Spirits Within celebrates its 15th anniversary this week, having released on July 13th of the year 2001. Well, that about wraps us up for this week's edition of The Arcade. We thank you so much for joining us, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, taking time out of your Pokemon Go experience that you have chosen to either play us in the background as you're walking around, or just your phone's kind of off charging and you can't really be playing Pokemon Go or something.
Or you're at work and you're really actually working and you're resisting the urge to play Pokemon Go for fear of losing your job or whatnot, or pissing your boss off or pissing all your coworkers off.
There's that too. And you've chosen us as your outlet when you cannot Pokemon Go. Probably doesn't help that we spoke almost entirely about Pokemon Go this week. And now you're just really jonesing to play it.
You just like the addiction is like really getting to you and you're like raking your fingers across the table going, gotta play it now.
We apologize, but also we don't apologize.
Yes.
You made your choices.
Hashtag sorry, not sorry.
let us know just how bad your Pokemon Go addiction is. Email us info@thearcadeshow.com or, just use the contact us form on our website, thearcadeshow.com, which is also where you can find the show notes for this week's episode, where we'll include links to all the various news items that we spoke of on this program, as well as links to, try and promote or, you know, sign up or, you know, unlist yourself as being like a Pokemon gym or Pokemon stop or something. We'll have those links there as well. Or you can also follow us on Twitter. Get in touch with us there. We are at The Arcade Show, and on Facebook, facebook.com/The Arcade Show. And hell, we're even on iTunes. Find us there in the podcast section. Just search The Arcade and subscribe to us there. Leave us a review, a rating, 5 stars, 4 stars. Anything less than that is like, really? Let's talk. What did you not like? What's not working for you?
Yes. Exactly.
So until next week, everybody, good night.
Good night.